Please take your seats and let's call this meeting to order. Please take your seats and let's begin the meeting. All right, our purpose for this discussion tonight is to receive information regarding the results of the Colorado Measures of Academic Success testing on science and social studies. The new CMAS tests in science and social studies show that Jeffco students are exceeding the state averages in both subject areas according to results released by the CDE, the Colorado Department of Education, on October 27, 2014. The CMAS tests measure student performance in a new way on the more rigorous Colorado academic standards and set a baseline for Colorado students' performance. Student performance falls into one of four categories in the CMAS assessment: distinguished command, strong command, moderate command, and limited command, instead of the TCAP achievement categories of unsatisfactory, partially proficient, proficient, and advanced. Mr. McMenemy, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yes, good evening, President Witt, members of the board. This evening I have Dr. Sina Morgan and Dr. Carol Eaton to do a presentation on CMAS.
Dr. Morgan.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity to share the results with you and give the context of the new baseline that we're going to be operating from for the near foreseeable future. The CMAS Science and Social Studies tests were given to 4th grade, 5th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade in last spring, and so these are the results from those assessments. It's important to recognize that students are expected to share their learning in a different way. So we have skills and knowledge within the Colorado academic standards. Those skills and knowledge were assessed in TCAP. Those same skills and knowledge are assessed in CMAS, but they're assessed with students demonstrating that learning in a different way. So the items are more complex test items, and they have students incorporate higher order thinking skills to be able to navigate the information in the items and make a conclusion from the information provided. Another context setting to give is that we've talked about how a balanced assessment practice gives you the opportunity to focus on instruction for the purpose of comparability and or the purpose of accountability. The state assessments, including CMAS Science and Social Studies, serve the purpose of comparability of student performance as well as accountability of student performance. They can serve the purpose for informing instructional effectiveness, to the degree that you're able to look at a standard within each content area and make some judgments about student performance. So now we have the ability to look at a baseline of that performance and determine student success or challenges with those standards. But their most effective purposes are around comparability and accountability. I like to think about what students know and are able to do as knowing, doing, and using. So the Colorado assessments, CMAS assessments, and Science and Social Studies are measuring students' ability to know knowledge and skills, use those knowledge and skills, and in some cases begin to use those knowledge and skills. As you described at the beginning, the levels are different on the CMAS assessments. So the on-track performance levels are strong command and distinguished command. Looking at the 2014 fifth grade science CMS results, we can see that JEFCO, compared to the state, that we have 37% that had strong command and 5% that had distinguished command. An important comparison that can be made between TCAP and CMS is the comparison of how much consistency did we maintain in our performance difference from the state. And for most of the science and social studies performance, social studies is new, but for science and performance, we actually maintain those differences. Other than that, there's very little comparison that could be made between TCAP and CMS due to the very different way that the students are assessed. It is helpful for us to take a look at the comparison of the Denver metro area districts to show JEFCO's performance in context of the other districts. So this slide shows the Denver public schools through to Douglas, and these districts are ordered with based on students' free and reduced lunch numbers, and JEFCO is in the middle. And you can see that black line indicates where the line is where JEFCO's on-track performance begins. And then if you want to do a comparison to other districts, you can see where JEFCO's on-track performance falls compared to other districts across the metro area. This is CMAS 8th grade science and our performance in JEFCO compared to the state, as well as the CMAS science 8th grade science performance across the Denver metro area. JEFCO, again, is in the middle, and the black line represents where JEFCO's on-track performance falls. Social studies was first assessed with state assessments this last spring, and this is the performance of our fourth grade students in social studies compared to the state. This slide shows the performance comparison of our fourth graders' on-track performance by the black line compared to the Denver metro area districts. The middle school grade that's assessed in social studies is seventh grade, and this slide shows JEFCO's performance compared to the state. This last data slide shows performance of JEFCO compared to the metro area districts, and the on-track performance is delineated by the dotted black line. One of the important considerations around the way that students are being assessed that I wanted to highlight is represented by the list of top skills that Fortune 500 companies are surveyed on a regular basis around the top skills that they look for in their employee candidates. And this is the list of top skills. And the ones highlighted in blue are represented by the higher order thinking skills that are being incorporated in different assessments in CMAS. And the last thing that I wanted to point out is when we look at our performance in science and social studies and we look at this new baseline, one of the questions that comes up immediately is how do we address the performance challenges that we see in this data, and how do we know what our performance successes are? And so I point out that the way that we know these things is through our balanced assessment practices. So classroom assessments are critical and common assessments are critical in understanding how our students' performance strengths are and what their performance challenges are. Questions?
I'll try and do a couple of rounds here and give everyone a chance to get a couple of questions out and then feed back and forth off of one another what's come up. So, Ms. Feldman?
So I understand that the score comparability from TCAP to CMAS is non-existent. I'm struggling with the words that they chose to use for CMAS. Moderate command of a content, of a skill, suggests to me something different than partially proficient. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yes. So there are descriptors for those performance levels, and I don't know if we included those in the PowerPoint, but we can.
They're not in the PowerPoint, but I think you gave them to us.
So CDE identified those descriptors, and it's really a different measure. So we're really now talking about readiness in the content areas. It's an entirely different way of looking at the results. So when you look at those descriptors, and I'm going to pull those up.
So while you're doing that, I'll just elaborate a little bit. It seems to me that limited command and partially proficient is more in line. I mean, just the words for me. And I don't know. Chemistry was never my strong suit, and I think I might have had a moderate command of that content. I don't know. It just the words bother me.
I think moderate command here talks about that students are performing at this level, demonstrating a moderate command of concepts, skills, and practices embodied by the Colorado Academic Standards. And they likely will need academic support to engage successfully in further studies in the content area. That's how it's described by CDE.
Okay. I will just practice that until I get that. I have an opinion question for you. Do you think that our students are doing better in science than they are in social studies because of the practice they've had on TCAP? When you look at social studies scores, they're higher across the state.
Science scores.
The science scores, yes, I'm sorry. And social studies, this is the first time that kids may have been struggling just with that. Could that have been something, do you think? What do you think?
Well, I think clearly our students have had a lot more state assessment expectations around science. And they've also been able to demonstrate their knowledge on standardized tests in science, whereas in social studies they've not had that opportunity. So I believe we'll see more areas of concentration in social studies in our elementary and middle schools to look at what this means now and how we now are, what we are asking students to do on the state test around this. It's new.
The next time we have this conversation, I'd love to hear from social studies about what is happening to address the challenges we see in the data.
I know that there are individuals in the social studies community that advocated for a state test in social studies due to the fact that they felt like if that's the measure that's going to be judging performance, therefore that's where the resources, what's getting measured gets the resources, gets the attention, and there's a certain amount of desire that that content area have legitimacy in the decision making around how we prioritize our resources. My own professional opinion about the assessment of the content area is that I believe teachers have been assessing in that content area and in the ways that they have aligned to their instruction. And so Carol's point about the way that this particular test tested social studies may be out of alignment with the way that they have been teaching and assessing social studies up to this point. So it's kind of a catch-22.
Sure, thank you.
And I would add, there are performance level descriptors that go deeper into what each of the commands mean. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in science, At the moderate command level, a student typically can analyze speed and acceleration of moving objects, describe different forms of energy and energy transfer. So there's bullets under each for each content area and grade level that gives more of a descriptor of what does moderate mean, what does strong mean, what does distinguished mean. And we've shared that with our educators along with next steps for instructional implications to help them decipher this data, understand what it means for instruction.
Thank you.
Ms. Dahlkemper.
Pull this on over. Ms. Feldman asked a couple of questions about social studies, so I'm going to switch over and ask a few questions about science. Looking forward, looking ahead, what do you think we need to be thinking about in terms of, especially as we're going to continue to have a budget conversation, preparing our teachers with the right professional development to meet the science standards, or thinking about how we best equipped our classrooms so that no matter where a school is located in any community, all kids have access to science labs or any sort of equipment they might need to conduct different experiments or whatever that might look like, just in terms of the design of the classroom. Any thoughts along those lines about issues we should be thinking about to ensure our kids are well prepared in that area?
I know that we've actually gotten that question from schools as well. So the desire to have that decision making around the resources that they want to have for the different content areas, particularly science and social studies, knowing that those may be areas that they need to target resources for, and that the student-based budgeting will be very helpful in that process because they will be able to prioritize by school. Some schools already have strong resources in science, and other schools will want to prioritize that area, and some schools have strong resources in social studies around the civics work that they do and the citizenship work, and so that in the history focus. So it provides that opportunity for schools to have the decision making based on what resources they already have and what they need.
And is there anything that you see evolving in terms of professional development as we work with our teachers to make sure they have the professional development that they need to be successful with children in areas like social studies or science?
Our content teams, our specialists in curriculum and instruction, have been partners in this work of analyzing the data and developing resources and learnings for our teachers. So that's ongoing work that we're processing through. What does this data mean? What does it mean for instruction? And our social studies and science content experts have been working on not only resources that teachers can reference, but also trainings that can support them.
Great. I have one more question about the balance of assessments, because that's an issue, of course, that we've been talking about as a board. Had a great conversation at our last board meeting about this issue at our last study session. And as we look at the CMAS test, it increases, of course, the number of tests that we're giving students a bit. And I'm wondering, Dr. Morgan, if you can talk a little bit more about any additional conversations by the 1202 task force, any conversations that you've been having among district leaders about the balance of those formative and summative tests and how they work together, just any reactions overall in terms of the direction you think we're heading or things we need to be aware of as we talk about these issues.
Most of the conversation has centered around what information do we receive from the science assessment and now the social studies assessment that's helpful to us as part of that balanced assessment view? And is there a possibility that we could get a similar view of English language arts and math without having to test every year? Therefore, we could have summative assessments every year that are state level, but not have to have the extent of assessing in certain grade levels when they're having to take all of the assessments that are required.
Great. Thank you.
Ms. Williams?
So just to clarify, the district is going to be doing CMAS testing in the fall and in the spring? Is that correct?
CMAS is given to the seniors in the fall. All the rest of the students will take CMAS in the spring.
Okay. So when I look at, for instance, the CMAS fifth grade science, the grid that you gave us, you know, I'm very proud that Jeffco is above most of the other districts in the state, and I think that's wonderful. But when I add up those numbers, 58% are below fifth grade science level, that medium number that you gave us. That's, you know, we really need to work on these scores. Same thing with the social studies. 78% of fourth graders are below par. And so the question I have is, I know in my son's high school, while the seniors are testing right now, they've shut down the school for 9th, 10th, and 11th graders. They have no school in the morning for almost 2 weeks. So that disruption of precious instructional time for basically 4 weeks out of the year is a lot. That's a tremendous amount of time. It's also a disruption for families. And then when we don't get the results back for almost 6 months, I still question, how does that help our students and our teachers be better teachers and have higher proficiency rates?
I'm going to interpret your, or assume your question is related to how we can use that assessment data in a beneficial way, if at all. Is that what you're...
If at all. And what if we actually had that 4 weeks back of instructional time? You know, teachers are really pressed on how much time they have to teach everything in their framework. And, you know, that's precious time.
No, and that's one of the major concerns around twofold. One, that the assessments are online, and therefore they're using the technology that could be used for instructional purposes. So that's one of the concerns. And also the length of time it takes to assess students due to the fact that you have to schedule assessments through the technology. So those are two serious considerations that are across the state and are being shared with the state by all the districts throughout the state, because Jeffco happens to be in a pretty good position. There's other districts that are in even more of a impacted position than we are as far as that time that it takes away. So that's a huge concern. As far as our collaboration with IT and with schools, trying to really mitigate as much as possible the impact that we can within our circle of control.
Mr. Newkirk.
Thank you, Mr. Witt, and Dr. Morgan, Dr. Eaton. For clarification here, could you tell me, I understand the CMAS tests were developed specifically for Colorado and based on the new standard set in 2010. Is that correct? Okay, and that in my recollection is the previous superintendent had the district aligned to these standards. So my question is, would it be accurate to say that the district has been preparing for the types of material that would be on these tests since 2010?
Well, if you recall from the beginning of the presentation, the skills, the knowledge and skills that is being assessed is the same knowledge and skills. The students are being asked to demonstrate their learning in a different way. So Theoretically, your point is accurate, except that if I'm being measured by TCAP, I'm going to teach my students to demonstrate their learning the way that TCAP measures it. The transition to CMAS and not having that view of the way that those students are going to be demonstrating their learning creates that shift. So that's part of the transition to... If students are being asked to demonstrate their learning in this way, what does that look like? Now that the students have experienced that, there's a much greater degree of transparency about what that type of performance looks like.
It was a transitional period as well in adopting the new standards. So we didn't necessarily immediately adopt to 2010 the new standards. It was a transitional time, and that's why we had a transitional TCAP assessment, so that there could be an opportunity for teachers to develop the new curriculum, to understand what the new expectations are, and then to roll it out into our schools over time. So we had some time to transition. And the other piece that I might add to the way that it's being assessed differently is when you think about those performance level descriptors, at moderate command, a student would describe different forms of energy transfer. At strong command, they'd analyze different forms using tools. And at distinguished command, they'd use models to predict energy transfer. So while energy transfer has been a part of the standards the Colorado Academic Standards and the previous model content standards, the way they're demonstrating it, just a concrete example of Dr. Morgan's discussion of the new test, is it's at a different level.
All right, and then circling around to what Ms. Fellman asked and what Ms. Williams had noticed here, I looked up, and yes, moderate command, the definition is, students will likely need academic supports to engage successfully in further studies in this content area, and limited command means students will likely need extensive academic supports to engage successfully in further studies in this content area. So from the graph, it looks like by CDE's definition in social studies shows roughly only one of four students at both of the fourth and seventh grade levels have a command of the subject that would not require academic supports to be successful in this content. And I find it interesting, too, that in eighth grade science, the results track pretty closely with what the ACT scores show us for 11th graders, that about 60% of our 11th graders have below career and college-ready skills in science. It seems to be tracking from eighth grade up to 11th grade. If you compare what we just saw in CMAS and ACT, could you comment on that?
Well, I would say that that's a good thing. If the various measures that we're using to measure content area actually corroborate each other, then they will be useful in being able to be predictive of performance on ACT, which is what we would want our assessments to be able to do.
Okay, and I have a question in that regard, too, but I understand we've got another round, Mr. Witt, so I will defer to Ms. Fellman.
I think I'll ask a couple of questions.
Oh, that's right.
Given the results that we're seeing here, both in science and social studies, did our acuity testing in prior years predict in any way where we would land here in the prior year? Did we have a sense of where we were going to land in social studies, which is a significant deficit, I think, to the scoring expectation of moderate command?
Our acuity test is in English language arts and mathematics and science, so we did not have an acuity test in social studies to have any prediction. And also our acuity tests were aligned to the old TCAP assessment and the old standards at one point, and just this year they've transferred to English language arts and mathematics to the higher rigor type assessments. So we are beginning to see a baseline now of English language arts and mathematics of what that looks like in the expectations for the new assessments.
Did we do any work in the prior year or two, knowing that this was coming, to take our acuity in science at the very least and see where we thought we would land in this new framework? Or did we feel like, what have we learned from acuity testing last year?
The measure that's been the most accurately predictive of performance on these new assessments is actually NAEP. And the performance on NAEP has been highly predictive to the performance that students would demonstrate in English language arts and mathematics to the new way, the new rigorous structures of these assessments. So we could actually use NAEP to predict how students would perform on PARC coming up.
And I'm going to ask an opinion question and then go back around, and that is, in your opinion, do we have any learning in social studies about perhaps a need for additional rigor or additional attention in that area, or do you feel like it is just a baseline reset with a new testing method?
I would say that we have focused on skills and knowledge and having students demonstrate that standard performance of those skills, as we've been held accountable to through the CSAP and then TCAP process. And we have known that in the past 2 years we have been working on shifting, having a paradigm shift of focusing on a more rigorous and higher order thinking model. And especially last year there was extensive work in the district done around that in helping that practice shift. I would say that we find ourselves caught between the last year we found ourselves caught between a rock and a hard spot when we're trying to have a paradigm shift in instruction, but knowing that we're still being judged and evaluated by a former model. So when we were taking TCAP for reading and writing and math, and science and social studies are integrated, especially in elementary school, are content areas that we would want to have integrated with reading and writing, that there is that tension there. I would say absolutely there's a tremendous amount of work to do in being able to focus that rigor and also our attention to social studies, but it's at the elementary level when we need to be done in an integrated way. It will not be helpful to just layer on another thing. It'll be very necessary for us to support that integration of instruction so that reading and writing become the vehicle for the way we learn in science, social studies, and mathematics, and really be able to use that in an effective and productive way.
Well, I have a couple more questions, but I'll wait for round two. Ms. Feldman?
Okay, this one, actually, Mr. McMenemy, you may get to answer. I want to ask about, so I'm going to push off of something Mrs. Williams started with. I believe there was a Chalkbeat article today where it said that Jeffco students are all in school right now, yet Mrs. Williams said that 9th, 10th, and 11th graders are not. Can you comment on that?
So I don't know the answer to that. The information we have was that all students were in schools, but there was significant impact to what they were doing in schools because of the technology. But I will follow up on that.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that. I'd like to make sure I understand. The other question I have for you real quick is, my understanding is that NAEP is a test that's randomized who gets it through districts, states. I mean, they go through a number of randomization processes. Do we get to take NAEP all the time, or how does that work?
NAEP is the state test that they give every other year in language arts and mathematics and sometimes science and social studies, depending. What happens is they do not give it as a district. They select districts and then schools and then students. So it's sampling at different layers. And so we don't receive scores at a school level because there probably aren't enough students to really generalize to the population. You would just have a sampling of students. What we are able to do is look at a state and say, this is what the scores look like at a state. And then we can see at a district level through a national lens what we look like on the NAEP.
Do they release items so that we can use NAEP items for practice?
There are released items on NAEP, and we have made those available to our educators.
Great.
To look at.
Thank you.
I'd like to go back to science real quick. Do we have a sense of how the science scores rate in our STEM schools, like Bell, for example, or others? Do we see a boost in science scores related to the CMAS in our neighborhood schools that have a strong STEM pathway?
We are continuing to analyze the CMAS data. It's pretty recent. They had to reissue the data, as you may be aware, because they had to make some corrections from the state level.
Right.
So we continue
right.
to drill into that data and look at different programs, but we haven't had a chance to dig that deeply yet.
Okay.
I can respond anecdotally that schools have shared that those that have the resources are much happier with the performance that they've had. So I think it goes back to the resource question, ensuring that teachers have the resources they need to provide the instruction at the degree that the expectation is there.
And Dr. Morgan, can we unpack that a little bit? When you say schools have the resources they need, they feel that they're more successful. What kinds of things are they sharing with you? Is it the STEM pathway in terms of curriculum? Is it more precise or targeted teacher professional development, time to collaborate among teachers?
Well, it's broader than that. It's really having an instructional model that has science as part of that model. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they're STEM. We have some schools that they have a scientific inquiry model, and so they're utilizing scientific thinking as a mechanism for a lot of different instructional delivery. And then we have other schools that have a much more traditional model, but they utilize science resources as part of the package of the way that they deliver all of their instruction, and so they're having a lot of success with their students as well. So it comes down to the resources and then this, the teacher's training and the use of those resources and really having a cohesive instructional model that supports that learning.
And how do we as a district determine whether it is consistent across the board? In other words, all schools have access to those different instructional models or different approaches to ensure students, no matter what part of Jefferson County they may live, are receiving high-quality instruction because teachers have the resources, schools have the resources, and the other things they need to be successful with kids.
And it goes back to accountability, to ensure that first and foremost, there's an accountability that instruction is valued and important. And then that the school is able to demonstrate that they have the resources they need. And if they don't have the resources they need, is it because of a lack of being able to get those resources, or it hasn't been a priority? And part of, when I go back to earlier in my conversation, the accountability has been most strongly tied to reading, writing, and math. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the fund distribution, when we're talking about our schools that are highly impacted, even direct the focus to reading, writing, and math. So being able to expand that to really understand that we need to look at all of the content areas in a much more cohesive and comprehensive approach.
And I guess just one more follow-up question, and Mr. McMenemy, this might be something that you would want to weigh in as well. I guess what I'm wondering, though, is how does the district determine whether it's consistent from school to school? How do you measure that? How do you assess that? Is that in part through the school UIP process? Is it through conversations with areas of schools throughout the district? How do we as a district determine whether that's happening consistently? And then secondly, how do we figure out how to respond? How can we be responsive to provide the resources, the professional development, the instructional models, that guidance moving forward?
So I think there's a couple things moving forward that we would ask principals to do, and our achievement directors are going to be key with that. I think, first of all, you have to assess yourself against like demographic schools. So take a look at where your demographics are and what are the demographics of other schools both in and outside of our district, and how is your performance against those schools. And then the second piece is, how is your performance against the highest performing schools? And then you have to sit down and talk about what are the practices that they have in place in their building that's allowing these scores. I would assume that based on the composite scores for our district, that like demographics is probably not going to be as valuable as looking at the schools that are performing at the highest level. And we have the ability to go in and drill down on any school in the state of Colorado against CMAS. And then we would leave it up to buildings to make those decisions about who they want to talk to or who they want to emulate. So what science curriculum is being taught at a school in Boulder or a school in Littleton that would replicate what we're doing in our schools? And there's different models in different schools, so you want to find the one that's the model that you're using and have that discussion in your science department about what is it that they're doing that we should be doing, what is it that they're doing that we shouldn't be doing, and how do we line up with them. And I think that's an important part of the conversation that you don't get from looking at the composite science score across our district, because we have such different variables in our buildings. I think you really have to look at how does your building demographically match up against other buildings, and how do the highest performing schools perform in the state of Colorado? So that'd be how I would approach it as a building principal.
But I think I also heard you say at the beginning that those are the kinds of conversations that the student achievement directors are having.
Correct.
With schools to help guide and
Correct.
Provide some leadership on that process and to work collaboratively with principals.
And I think that's one of the great things about the model that we have for overseeing buildings now is we have achievement directors that have less schools that can really have those conversations on a deeper level with building principals rather than be the 1-45 model. They can go deep, and those are things that how do you use the data that you're getting is an important conversation for a building principal.
You mentioned the unified improvement planning process, and that's an important tool. Schools that have been very successful in implementing that strategy as a school improvement model and really making it be a part of a dynamic process of school improvement have found that to be a useful way of addressing performance challenges and being able to identify what are our performance challenges specifically, so not the smoke detector, because what we saw today is the smoke detector. So now we need to dig in and find out what the fires are. And so we dig into the data, we find where the fires are, and then we find out what the root cause of the fires are. We address those root cause with action and have clear performance targets that we're trying to attain, and then we track those performance targets throughout the school year. That process is very powerful when implemented in a very strategic way.
Ms. Williams?
So the couple points that I want to make, and then I'll have a question with it, is we know that with the online testing, there is an incredible amount of collection of data, private and personal information on our students and teachers, and that as Pearson, who administers these tests, won't reveal who that information is given to. So that's a concern. I know Mr. McMinimy talked about that collaboration piece, but if teachers are forced to sign a privacy agreement saying that they won't talk about the test in or out of classroom and they're not allowed to look at it, how can we have that collaboration piece? And the high-stakes testing, that they're expensive, they create stress to our students and teachers. And, you know, my question is there another way? Is there another way to test our kids that isn't going to take 2 to 4 weeks out of their instructional time and get similar data?
The best way to be able to successfully measure student performance is having a balanced view and being able to have those assessments that are directly tied to the classroom instruction be the majority of the assessment practice that students experience. Common assessments that allow for comparability, whether they're an assessment that we bring in off the shelf, I call off the shelf assessments, or we build them ourselves. And then the third factor is at some point being able to compare ourselves beyond our borders. But those assessments should not dominate the time that we have. I would say that as a concern, we have an opportunity as a state to change our structure of our state assessment system. This legislative session coming up is very much open and on point with viewing how we can do things differently. And so this is an opportunity, that a window of time that is really critical to address those concerns.
Mr. Newkirk.
Yeah, Ms. Feldman and Ms. Dahlkemper and I were at the CASB meeting a few nights ago, and this was a big subject there. And you recall there was some discussion in public and in some private groups, too, about does every student have to take the CMAS, the PARC, or whatever these non-prescriptive tests are to get an assessment of a school? There was some talk about sampling. There was talk about maybe doing it every other year. And say whatever the sample would be, if there's 400 students, there are statistically valid models that say if you take 47 or something like that to do it, and it would reduce the burden on the testing. What are your thoughts on that? Of course, there's prescriptive testing where every student would need to take it to assess that particular student's need. But the non-prescriptive ones, it seems like there could be a representative sample. Is that something that we or I'll speak for CASB as a group of school board members, should be pushing the legislature to allow? Could you comment on that?
That's definitely one of the questions that's been asked. When we talk about assessment, we're wanting to know what's the purpose and use. So if the purpose and use of a state assessment is solely accountability and comparability of schools, then it is not necessary to test every child. If the purpose and use of a state assessment is to show accountability and comparability at a student level, then it would be necessary. So it's really figuring out, as a state, what is our belief about the purpose and use of state assessments? And at this time, a lot of our decisions are driven by the federal laws, because the federal laws require that we assess every student in these content areas in these grade levels. So part of the conversations that have been happening at the state level is also having conversations with the representatives at the federal level and to see what's the willingness in being able to reauthorize the Elementary and Secondary Act to be able to have more of a sampling approach. And if you look across the, if you look at an international perspective, we are the only nation of top performing nations that assesses at the quantity we do for those state level external assessments. So it is part of the conversation and it is an option if, but we have to be willing to then as a district commit to having other means to help families, students, and teachers know how the students are performing at that comparability level. But we can do that at a local level if we want, if we were allowed.
So I would like to also add, on November 5th, we got a friendly reminder from CDE about CMAS and 12th grade participation in CMAS, and they had a bullet point for us to, it was not recommended that we follow this. It was basically, you will do this. The first one is state statute requires that all students enrolled in public schools must take CARO statewide assessments, and it cites the specific section. Obligated to assess students present during the testing window. That means if a school misses the initial testing day, the school is obligated to assess that student upon his or her return to school if that occurs while the testing window is open. So you have to have some type of schedule that sets up an opportunity for a student that if they're gone on the day of testing, you have to have a makeup day. A good faith attempt at assessing all students includes have a comprehensive makeup assessment plan. And this one is the one that's problematic for school districts. Districts and schools that do not meet the 95% participation rate requirement in two or more content areas will be assigned to an accreditation category or a school plan type that is one ranking lower than what would otherwise be assigned. So on the UIP, school performance framework, that really hurts you if you don't have 95% of your kids perform on that. So I think that we're in this place right now where there is an opportunity for us to have the discussion as a board and make a recommendation and, you know, speak pretty loudly about what we feel the results or the impact on our students is around assessment. And, you know, again, I think it goes back to what Dr. Morgan said. What's the purpose? You know, are our students that are currently taking CMAS going to be informed by their CMAS results next fall? I don't believe so. They're not going to be in our system anymore. So if it's all about how schools are performing, then why wouldn't we take a dipstick of a certain number of students in our schools and would probably get the same result? The PISA assessment does that. It takes a group of students that are 15 on a certain date and goes 30 days before or 30 days after and gives you a group of kids as a pool, and then randomly they generate, here's the kids that we're going to assess, and it gives you a pretty good idea of how your schools are performing. So I think there's an opportunity for us to come forward as a Board of Ed and say, this is what we believe our schools need in Jefferson County based on all the things that you've heard the past few weeks. It is a tremendous burden to our schools. All of you are absolutely right in the questions you're asking. What's the impact on instruction? It's huge. What's the impact on cost of technology? It's tremendous. You know, we had building principals this last weekend that had to go in and reformat computers, not because our IT people didn't do their job, but because Pearson changed something that changed the ability for that test to talk to our computers. So we had Chromebooks that no longer could access that. We have iPads that have keyboards on them that no longer, because the operating system has changed, that no longer are able to use that keyboard. Well, you have to have a keyboard to take the test. So there's a tremendous impact on not just the test for kids, but on the technology and the staffing to support that testing in our buildings.
All right, and then one follow-up question from what Ms. Dahlkemper was saying. I think that one of the things you were asking is to see what we are doing that works and maybe see what we are doing that doesn't work. And, for instance, which one of our schools did exceptionally well in science? And which one of our schools did well in social studies? What's the difference between what's working and what's not working? So I'm wondering if any future presentations, maybe we could get a series of questions answered for going forward here. For instance, which of our schools did particularly well in this area? Which of the programs that they're using are working? Which schools are not doing well? Which programs are they using that aren't working? And how do we expand what is working and eliminate what is not?
Mr. Newkirk, can I just dovetail on that real quick, just to bounce back and forth a little bit? I think that's great, and I think that we also want to look at some other issues, including professional development and some of those other strategies that we talked about a little bit earlier, especially as we think about the kinds of skills our kids are going to need, and also the high demand for STEM skills in Colorado. I mean, right now, Colorado's importing talent into the state to help meet that demand in STEM at a cost of about $18 million in fees. So what is it that we need to think about as a board in terms of how we allocate the resources we have in the ways that will, toward levers, I should say, that will have the greatest gain, whether it's professional development, whether it's resources, making sure that all schools have adequate resources. So I like that direction that you're going in having some follow-up conversation and adding some additional components to that as well.
Yeah, I agree, and I certainly wouldn't limit it to curriculum, which may have been what was implied in my question there. I would say, what is the amalgam that is making it work there? Is it curriculum? Is it professional development? Is it some kind of, something that they're bringing to it that maybe another school doesn't have, and vice versa? What's making it not work over there? So these series of questions, I'd be glad to email to you, and maybe the next presentation we have, if we could roll all that into it and get them answered.
I think that's a really important point for us to address, because I believe that in the school visits that I've had from the point of my starting in Jeffco, there are some tremendous successful practices occurring in our buildings, and so we don't have to travel to another state or go to some model system to be able to see practices that are really working with our students. And it would be a great asset if we are able to really bring forth and make explicit and provide the opportunity to share those assets with the rest of our district and have a successful school network call it off the top of my head, around really understanding what are the practices that are working well in buildings and how can we have other schools be able to have the opportunity to visit that practice and view it as it's in as it's being successfully implemented.
All right. And we need to shut this down, so I'll close with my own last question or own last comment.
I have one that more question, too, if we have time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And that is, number one, to piggyback on what Mr. Newkirk said a moment ago, I do feel like it's important when we look at information like this, testing information, where we have school-level information, I'd like to make certain we always see that so we can draw some conclusions about where things are working well and where they're not. That summary information and analysis is important, but so is some detail. So I personally would like to see a by-school breakdown of our CMAS scores, and hopefully we can see that shortly. And then secondly, I would put the question to you of, when we look at our testing burden, Mr. McMenemy mentioned a moment ago that, you know, we have an opportunity to send a message that reducing the testing burden through statistical sampling of student scores, through some creative thinking, is an opportunity to affect what's going on. Is there real dialogue occurring between the state and the federal government presently on this topic, or is it something that is that might be contemplated as a result of the HB 1202 committee results, or how do we get some traction on that?
At this point, the dialogue that I'm privy to is between state leaders and federal leaders in our state, and just testing the waters of what is the opportunity at the federal level for having leaders do that work, carry that work forward of reauthorizing Elementary and Secondary Act. I believe that it is an opportunity when we think about what can be accomplished at the federal level, that would be an opportunity for all involved to see as progress. It seems to be an opportune time to do that.
Okay. Ms. Dahlkemper, I'm going to ask if you'll hold your question for the third grade reading section. I'm sure we'll have some more time to talk about achievement. We've got 2 minutes here before the next section has to start, and we need to take a break here before we move to the next meeting.